The Supreme Court just handed the Trump administration a significant win, at least for now, in its push to change how states and the federal government manage voter rolls and mail-in ballots. The case centers on a March executive order with two major directives. First, President Trump instructed the Department of Homeland Security to use federal data to build citizenship lists and send them to states for maintaining their voter rolls. Second, it directed the U.S. Postal Service to create new requirements for mail-in voting. USPS would require states that deliver ballots to provide lists of all mail-in ballot recipients. That information could potentially be shared with other parts of the administration for election-related enforcement or investigation. But this victory is not the end of the story. The Supreme Court said it was too early to decide whether the order is unconstitutional because key parts have not yet been implemented. And the order's directives for the U.S. Postal Service remain on hold because they were blocked in a separate case that was not before the High Court on Monday. So litigation will continue. But if the policy survives in court, election officials warn that putting the new procedures in place before the midterms, which is now less than 90 days away, could be extremely difficult.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's what happened. That's what happened just yesterday. I'm talking to you on the 25th of August. The Supreme Court decided in favor of President Trump's executive order, which that, I'm telling you, that is just great news. You can never say, no one can ever say that President Trump hasn't done about everything he can to stop this voter fraud. And so he's just, it's an uphill battle. In fact, what happened in this, he issued that order, I think, in March, and then in June, a Massachusetts-based judge, Indira Talwanf, blocked it. And she's, I think, an Obama appointee, of course. So that's what started all this. And that reminds me, as I understand it, the Supreme Court also made a decision yesterday that these lower court judges can no longer do these stays. I don't have the details in front of me, but I'm just telling you, that's really good news, too. That's really good news, too. But on this executive order, the president was, he asked, what happened? The red states cooperated. They wanted the vote, they're to purge their voting rolls, and we needed to find out who were citizens and who weren't. Well, most of the blue states just would not do it. They just refused. And so the executive order requires federal agencies to develop state-by-state lists of verified U.S. citizens of voting age. And it directs the U.S. Postal Service, which has been up to its knees or ears or neck in guilt over this voting fraud. It's amazing, especially in the 2020 election and probably before that, too. But it directs the U.S. Postal Service to begin the process of creating new government regulations about how mail-in and absentee ballots are handled, and publish the proposed regulations to allow for public comment and eventually publish the final binding regulations. And it also forbids the Postal Service from sending mail ballots to anyone not on the verified citizen list. So, and also, last thing, I just want you to know, I just think this is so important. I'm giving you details here so you'll understand how great this is. The order also requires the USPS to impose new envelope design and barcode standards for election mail. Now, there is an if and a but, and CNN, the report you just heard, was eager to add the but. I'm not exactly sure what that means. I'm sure that the administration is moving fast to resolve whatever that lower court issue is that seems to be holding this up, according to CNN. Who knows? But the truth of it is, 28 states and the District of Columbia challenged this and have been refusing to just clean their voter rolls and to find out ways to identify illegal immigrant voters. You know, in one state, just not long ago, when President Trump made that state that speech on election integrity, and that we'd found out that China has stolen 220 million Americans' voter information around 2020 and more. We found out that in one state alone, they had found 30 to 40,000 illegal immigrant votes, just in one state. And so we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem. We know that, right? And for years, they've been telling us, oh, no, that's never, that hardly ever happens. It's not possible. Well, of course, it is possible. Most of us knew that. But it's being verified now. But the Supreme Court is coming around on this, it seems. And so that's good news, and we'll find out, you know, if they finally land the plane on it. I certainly hope so. 90 days to the election is not very long to get this thing into motion. So we just pray that that whatever needs to happen, happens. Well, this is Sandy Rios with you, and hi, by the way. Today we're just going to spotlight, I think, about four different races in the country where there are radical socialists running for office against Republican candidates. And I just have some comments to make that I think, I hope, will be helpful as we try to make a decision about who to vote for and who not to vote for. And we'll talk about all of that. But first, doctors told Alba pregnancy was impossible. Her husband's diagnosis confirmed it. A child of their own simply wasn't going to happen. And then the impossible happened. Alba was pregnant. We might call it a miracle, but to Alba, it didn't feel like one. That positive pregnancy test felt like a mistake, a cruel twist of science she didn't understand or want. Nothing added up. She had accepted pregnancy just wasn't possible. The baby was never planned. And suddenly she was confused, afraid, and overwhelmed. What should have felt like a miracle felt like a crisis. Then Alba walked into a preborn network clinic. She was welcomed with compassion and given a free ultrasound. And when she saw her baby and heard that tiny heartbeat, everything changed. Fear gave way to hope, and Alba chose life. Today, baby Laura is healthy and thriving. A reminder that when God is writing the story, impossible doesn't get the final word. Right now, another mother needs that moment, and you can help her have that moment by providing an ultrasound. We're talking about preborn, of course, and they're a sponsor of our show. And they do such important work in such a great way. It's an ultrasound. It's $28. We'll provide one ultrasound for one of these moms who is confused or not certain about her pregnancy. And as Alba did, when they see the baby, they just, generally speaking, more than half of them, and I think more than that, maybe 60%, change their mind about abortion. Maybe they adopt the baby out, but they just decide not to terminate its life. And so isn't that beautiful? It really is. So if you would like to help Preborn, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. All right. Well, today we're going to be talking about these races, and they're all interesting, even if they're not in your state. There's a little twist to each of them and a lot of stuff to just really watch out for. And we'll talk about that on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Thank you.
President Trump threw his full support behind Republican Senator Darlene Graham, who faces a runoff election Tuesday. He spoke at her campaign rally in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
I think Lindsey respected Darlene more than any other person he knows, including me. That does not make me happy.
Graham is running against conservative Representative Ralph Norman to replace the late Senator Lindsey Graham on the November ballot.
They say I'm not a politician. Guilty as charged.
Some voters at the rally say President Trump's endorsement is important to them.
I'm here to support Darlene, and I'm also here, I want to see Trump.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Well, this is happening today. This is August the 25th that I'm speaking to you. So this election is happening right now in South Carolina, and I'm hoping that some of you South Carolina voters will hear this, or some of you who are from other states can send this this podcast, at least a portion of it, to them as we talk about this. If you remember that Darlene Graham's brother, Lindsey, died, and it was very, very sad. And he raised Darlene Graham, his little sister, because their parents had died. So it's actually a very moving story. They're a very close family. So President Trump and Lindsey Graham had become very close friends. Who knew? You know, I didn't realize that until Lindsay died. So President Trump decided that Darlene Graham should be appointed to just fill the remainder of Lindsay's term, what he would have had before, you know, which is just the rest of this year. And then so she jumped in, and she's now officially Senator Darlene Graham. She has another last name. But I want to tell you something that I don't think most people will know, and this is very important, I think. Most people in South Carolina and around the country are wondering why President Trump asked her to then run for the general election, which means that she would be a senator for 6 years. And so they're scratching their heads about that, and some are very upset because her opponent, Ralph Norman, is a very strong candidate. He ran for governor there. He was one of the original members of the Freedom Caucus in the House. He has 100% rating, or nearly 100% rating, in every conservative group. Turning Point USA, Club for Growth, Heritage Action, the Liberty Score from Conservative Review, that they give them a 92%. And that's the toughest grader. That's my good friend Daniel Horowitz. And he is a tough grader, and I'm grateful for that. But Ralph is just a stalwart. He's good on all the issues. And so he was already running, of course, before President Trump nominated Darlene. And some are wondering, why did President Trump do that? Because we don't know much about Darlene. Well, you know what? I think I'll come back about the answer to that. Adam, don't let me forget to give them the answer, because I want to talk about Darlene a little bit. She's certainly very sweet, and she does look like her brother, doesn't she? But we've been finding out some things about her. She was asked a question about the issue of pro-life, about the issue of life, and she gave a very awkward response. She said, well, I believe in the six-week rule, or being abortion being all right at 6 weeks, which is what our state voted for. And then she just didn't know what else to say. I'm sorry I didn't pull that clip. I should have pulled it. But let me just trust me that she was not real strong on that. And interestingly, you know, many of us that are in the pro-life movement wonder why in the world that six-week limit became so popular a couple of years ago. And President Trump was pushing it. And it's like, abortion is abortion. Why are pro-life groups pushing 6 weeks? Because life is life. It's up to this legislators to come up with a compromise. It's not up to us to say, well, we could settle with a six-week ban. No, we don't want any babies killed. I mean, really, that just creates confusion. But it's a very political thing to do. And actually, Susan B. Anthony is behind this. They're the ones that came up with that six-week rule. And President Trump looks to them for guidance. So they're the ones that persuaded him to come out and support the six-week I'm not sure what it called, resolution, whatever it was. And many of us at the time thought, no, 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 no. Susan B. Anthony, that's your job, is to hold the line on life, not to find a settlement or a compromise. That's the role of the politicians. If there is to be a compromise, we push for life. So now there's quite a bit of controversy because Susan B. Anthony and National Right to Life came out in support of Darlene Graham, who is not real certain on life, against Ralph Norman, who's 100% life all the way. So many people in South Carolina and in other places, too, are disappointed that President Trump would appoint someone like Darlene, and then also are wondering what in the world's going on with Susan B. Anthony and the National Right to Life. And I can just tell you personally, because this is what I was doing when I was president of Concerned Women for America. I've worked in the life issue for years before that. But when I got to D.C., I learned a few things. And I was the first, actually, the first radio spokesperson for Susan B. Anthony. That's long before Marjorie was in charge. And they did the best, the most brilliant commercials on radio, persuading people that life was sacred. And I had the honor of being the voice for that. But they did drift. And I know why. And I won't name names. I'll just say they brought in a former congresswoman who was not real strong on these issues, and they became very political. So you need to know that about Susan B. Anthony. That's why they did this, because this was the political choice. I think Darlene is the establishment choice. And why would I say that? Because I'll tell you something else. Darlene was asked, this is a clip that she was giving testimony before she was the head of some state agency, and I don't even know what the name of it is, but she led a state agency in South Carolina. And she was giving testimony before, it must have been a state Congress, a state representative. And so this is what she said in this testimony, Darlene Graham.
We actually, one of the things I didn't mention, we had 83 consumers go to work last year. That's more than since 2017. Mm-hmm. And we've done some major things at our agency. We're working on all new policies and procedures, putting internal controls in place. We got a diversity inclusion committee. I want to be a leader in state agency when it comes to that. We are really rebuilding the foundation of that agency. So super excited about it. It's a lot of work, though.
Yeah. Thank you, Director.
Diversity and inclusion. She wants to become the leader of that. Diversity and inclusion, that's a major red flag. And so is the life question that she answered. So South Carolina voters have a big decision today. President Trump has endorsed Darlene, and they love him. But they know they love Ralph Norman, who's been there longer and has, he has his roots there, and he's got this incredible voting record. Darlene doesn't have a voting record, and now we've seen what she's answered on two questions. She's also said that she doesn't know anything about foreign policy. So, I mean, this is for the Senate, which is that, deals with foreign policy and nominates judges. We have to be very careful. We can't just nominate, our friends or people that we like. It has to be someone that's actually capable and equipped. And now here's the final thing. I just discovered from someone who knows, and I don't think this is common knowledge, I doubt it is, that it was actually Darlene who asked the president to appoint her before other people. He was trying to decide who to nominate, and she said, well, I'll do it. I want to be nominated. And so my interpretation of that, it put him in a really bad place. So it was Darlene's idea. It wasn't President Trump's. He was going to nominate. He was going to endorse someone else. So I'm just telling you, you need to know that. So if you got friends in South Carolina, you might want to get on the phone and make that really clear to them. I want to play one last clip when it comes to Darlene and President Trump, because it shows that, I don't know, it just shows the relationship between President Trump and the Graham family. And this is clip 14. Let's listen.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for your endorsement. It has meant the world to me. Thank you for your support. Thank you for coming to South Carolina. This is MAGA country, right? Yes! Woo! Absolutely. And Mr. President, I want to thank you for that beautiful eulogy you gave at Lindsay's service. That meant the world to me. It was beautiful, y'all, if you didn't hear it. And his friendship with Lindsay meant so much to Lindsay. You were one of his closest friends. I hope you know that. And you will forever be part of the Graham family for that. And Mr. President, I am proud to stand with you, to work hard for this country, and to work for this great state of South Carolina every single day.
So you can see how close President Trump was with Lindsey Graham. Like I said, who knew? But I would just make this point, and I think all of you will understand this. We really cannot appoint people just because we like them or they're our friends. I think it was very gracious of President Trump to ask her to fill in Lindsey's seat until the election took place. But this is a bridge too far from my perspective. I'll give you just a personal example on this. When I was, now this is different, I guarantee you, but when I was being considered for the job for president of Concerned Women for America, I wasn't sure. I mean, I thought I'd like to do that, or I thought maybe I could, but I wasn't like, yeah, I'm going to go in there and do the whole thing. Of course I can do it. And so I asked for submissions of, whether the comments of various people that were in leadership in D.C. and in Chicago and Illinois. And I was just amazed at the letters that came back, because those letters affirmed in me, first of all, God's call, and also gave me the encouragement that I could actually do that job. I mean, they stunning things. Okay, by contrast, I was asked to run for Senate in Illinois. This is against Dick Durbin. So I ask two friends of mine, I'll tell you who they are. It was Senator Peter Fitzgerald at the time, Senator from Illinois, and Congressman Peter Roskam, who are very good friends of mine. And I called them both on separate occasions and asked them to call me. And I didn't hear from them for a week or so. And then one night, I was praying about this, of course, and the phone rang, and it was Peter Roskam. And his comment was, "Sandy, don't do it. Don't do it. You're not right for that. That won't work. You'll go crazy." And then 30 minutes later, Senator Peter Fitzgerald called me and said, "Sandy, don't do it. You will hate it. This is not the right thing for you." All right, my point is, just because we have certain abilities doesn't mean we're right for everything. And those are my friends. If they really liked me, wouldn't they want me to be that person? No. I trusted their judgment and they gave me good advice. And that's all. I just don't vote for people because they're your buddies or they held your baby. You need to know where they are on the issues and what they're capable of doing. All right, so the next race I want to talk about is the one down in Texas. You know, Texas has great people who know what they believe, and they know they believe they love their state. They have a lot of confidence. They do a lot of bold and brave things. And they've given us some great legislators and great senators. And so, but, you know, this time and the last time, too, the Democrats, you know, kind of went a different way. When Senator Cornyn decided he would run again, he was seeking the endorsement of President Trump. But President Trump didn't give it to him. He gave it to Ken Paxton. So there's quite a fight now because the Democrats, Ken Paxton is the Republican nominee. We're going to talk about him in just a second. And the Democrats chose a gentleman named James Tallarico. Now, before I get into that, one of the things that made me want to have this conversation with you was I talked to a good friend of mine in Texas a couple of days ago. We were talking about other things, and I just said something about, well, you've got a really tough race going on down there in Texas between Tallarico and Ken Paxton. And she wrote me back and she said, well, most people around here are not going to vote because they hate Ken Paxton and they just don't want to vote for him. And I'm assuming she means Christians because that's her world and her, you know, that's her world. And I was very upset about that. So I want to talk to you about it just a little bit today and try to kind of make a point here. And I'm going to start with Ken Paxton. Well, you might wonder, why do the Texans hate him so much? Ken has been, and he's been accused of several things. And let me just give you he's been accused of state securities fraud charges, one count of failing to register as an investment advisor, and he was accused of persuading investors to put money into a tech company without disclosing that he received commissions. They came to a resolution, and the charges were dismissed, and so that happened in the Texas Senate. The other thing is the Texas House of Representatives voted to impeach Ken Paxton on 20 different articles. I don't know what they all are. They charged him with bribery, abuse of public trust, unconstitutional misapplication of public resources, obstruction of justice, and retaliation against former employees who reported him to federal authorities. He was acquitted in a trial in the Texas Senate in September 2023. He was acquitted on all counts and returned to office. So, and also he's had an alleged affair, which I don't know the details of that, but this is why people don't want Ken to be the senator. But I just want to balance that with some things here because this really impressed me. This is what Ken Paxton has done since he was the 51st Attorney General of Texas. He still is. He's running for Senate, but he's still the Attorney General of Texas. He filed more than 100 lawsuits against federal administration during the Biden presidency. He won numerous decisions regarding environmental rules, immigration enforcement, and labor regulations. He fought successfully to maintain border barrier construction. Remember all that in Texas? Remember, Joe Biden had dismantled whatever was not built on the wall and actually dismantled some of the wall and then sold the materials for just nothing. It's just tragic. And also, they just try to put all kinds of restrictions on Texas. So Ken Paxton fought that. He fought that whole business about barrier construction. He defended state deployment of physical deterrence into the Rio Grande and in the form of buoys. And he challenged federal policies on deportations. He secured a $1.4 billion settlement with Meta over the unauthorized capture of biometric data. He secured billions in relief funds for Texas as part of a nationwide multi-settlement with major pharmaceutical and opioid distributors. He defended state pro-life laws. He routinely led multi-state coalitions supporting religious liberty, school prayer, and voter identification, and there's more. So he has this bad reputation for some of the things that he's been accused of, but not, they were all, he was let go on all of that. So I don't know what that means, but it does taint his reputation. But he was really the most accomplished attorney general in the country. He did some outstanding things. And so that's Ken Paxton. And then we have James Tallarico. James is a school teacher. He claims to be a Christian. He uses scripture to make a point on all of his positions. He talks a lot about fairness and equity. He attacks corporations. He promotes more regulation and calls for costly expansion of government programs. He wants business to be restricted, entrepreneurship discouraged, and families taxed more and fuel endless spending. He uses words like bold investments and transformational change. So that's fine, but you know, he was a former teacher, and he praised an equity-based curriculum, inclusive reforms, and diversity initiatives that have turned classrooms into battlegrounds for cultural and political agendas. I'm reading a quote here. That was the result of his position on that. A striking aspect of Tallarico's messaging is his routine use of religious language. He cites scripture to support taxes, redistribution, and expanded government services. So I'll come back to that, but I think you should hear him. If you haven't heard Tallarico, he's very benign. His appearance is very benign. He dresses in a suit. He never yells. Listen to what he actually says. Let's listen. It's clip 11.
Did they teach you in Sunday school that Jesus Christ himself was a radical feminist?
The American flag is such a complicated symbol for most of us.
God is non-binary.
You can't call yourself a Christian and reject the stranger seeking asylum at our southern border.
Our trans community needs abortion care too.
Huh? Modern science obviously recognizes that there are many more than two biological sexes. In fact, there are six.
Prophetic voices like Jesus have helped me reckon with my own whiteness.
Our southern border should be like our front porch. There should be a giant welcome mat out front.
We are trying to fundamentally change the politics in this state and in this country.
Yeah. No need to sit and cry over, you know, your whiteness or your masculinity.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that gives you a better idea than me reading a list. He's just weird and he's very dangerous, I think. I'm surprised, honestly, that Christians in Texas are not rising up against this and speaking out. Maybe they are. I'm not in Texas. But really? I mean, this is something where Christians in this country need to rise up and refute. This is ridiculous stuff. It is certainly not scriptural. And when he invokes scripture, that's when we have every right to get in there and fight. God was a radical feminist, or Jesus was a radical feminist, and God is non-binary. Trans kids trans people need abortions. There are six biological sexes, six. And he says that I've had to reckon with my own whiteness. He's had to reckon with his own whiteness. What is in this? So I want to say kid because he's a lot younger than I am. He's like 30-something. What's in his head? What's in his head? It isn't good stuff. And actually, even though he says some additional things about moral issues, his ideas track with the radical socialists. And that phrase, the last thing he said in that clip was, we want to fundamentally transform, but then he's talking about Texas. That's exactly what Barack Obama said. I think they went to the same school because they do teach these candidates how to speak. If you'll notice, if you see them, like, catch them in an unguarded moment, they're just so nice and they smile. Like Francesca Hong, who was running in Wisconsin, and when you listen to her, on various statements she's made and things that she's written, she's just off the charts crazy. She's like got crazy eyes. You know what I'm talking about? And she was slated to win in Wisconsin, but I think the party stepped in and made it impossible for her to win, actually. But when she would go on camera in an interview, she would smile and she would talk like this. Yes, I believe. Or deny, you know, they skirt the issues. They don't really want to square on say what they really believe, but we know from other sources what they believe. And this is what I see these slick candidates that are trained. And trust me, they're training. They're trained. They're trained how to be candidates and what to say. And so James Tallarico comes from that school of training. You can just tell it, except that now he adds, because he's in Texas, they're using, you know, Bible verses and twisting them on these issues. So is God not non-binary? I just thought I'd ask. And was Jesus a feminist, a radical feminist? You know that's not true. You know that's not true. He was a champion for women, but to say he's a radical feminist is a stretch. And to say that there are six biological sexes, and to say that trans people need abortions, it's just, it's sick. It's sick. And so here's the thing, though. James is actually very close to Paxton. In fact, in some polls, James Tallarico is ahead, ahead of Ken Paxton. So that goes back to my conversation with my friend, that a lot of her friends and family, I guess I'm assuming, are not going to vote because Ken Paxton, because they just don't like Ken Paxton, and they're Christians, and it's, you know, they can't vote for a man like that that's been charged with all of these things and has an adultery also listed in his biography. They can't vote for a man like that, so they're just not going to vote. I'm not sure where to start. I'll just start at the top. The conclusion is, if you don't vote for Ken Paxton, because remember, Ken Paxton has done some great things. He's nothing like James Tallarico. If you don't vote for any of them, it is a vote for Tallarico. If you stay home and you don't vote for Ken Paxton as much as you disdain him or embarrassed by him or feel he has not met the mark of Christian standards, if you don't vote for him, you're going to get someone that's so much worse. And this is for the United States Senate. Do you understand? The Senate is the body that chooses judges. It's the body that has a lot of authority when it comes to national security and foreign policy. It's a very, as much as dysfunction as there is now, we don't need a James Tallarico. We don't need a James Tallarico in there. Can you even imagine? He would, if he doesn't, you know, push these radical policies, which he will, he will be a stumbling block for any good policy that might, that the good people might want to pass. It's just to be a disaster. And the stats are, I'm going to ask George Barna on soon, because George has done some really interesting polling on Christians and their involvement in the political arena during voting. And it's just, it's abysmal. It's abysmal how few Christians vote. And I realize, you have to realize, look, I think some of you figured it out when President Trump was elected and you realized what the alternative was. And even though President Trump didn't have a background that you felt you could, you know, we couldn't embrace or endorse his past behavior. But I emphasize past. You know, people can change. I mean, but we didn't know that at the time. But I think, you know, I'm more affirmed now than ever that he's very moral when it comes to his wife now and all of that stuff. But even so, your choice was Kamala Harris. And you knew what that meant. You knew that would be a disaster. You knew she wasn't capable and you knew she would have done horrible things. And so you came out and voted for President Trump. And so it's kind of the same thing in Texas now. You've got Ken Paxton, who has this incredible record of getting things done. He's got courage. What do we need in Senate? We need courage. We need men of courage. And yes, of course, we need men of high moral character. But you know what? That horse is out of the barn. We are not a people of high moral character. And if you want a candidate that really embraces your values and lives them out in their personal life, then you've got to get involved. You've got to get someone that you know to run. You've got to back them financially, do the walking, do the work of it, or you need to run yourself. But you can't sit back and wait for the primary and then see who's gone through the system and been chosen by some Christians who actually are paying attention. And then just, hold your nose and say, I can't vote for that person because I heard things bad things about their private life, and also some other things about Ken. I understand the hesitation, but I'm just telling you, you will heap coals of fire. What is the more righteous decision? Not voting and getting Tallarico by not even going to the polls and voting, or not voting for Ken Paxton because it's just against your spiritual sensibilities, but you're going to get Tallarico. So I just don't see how you can say that that's the better choice. You don't understand. If we don't vote, we're going to lose our country. And that's just true. We are on the precipice of something horrible. And so please, I just encourage you. And I would say one other thing. This might be some offensive to some of you. It just seems to me, and this was probably me years ago too, that I was very, I would never have said that or never even recognized it. Proud of my righteousness. Proud that I was a good girl, or proud that I was moral. And I was kind to people, and I didn't really, I didn't mistreat people that were lost, but I felt probably morally superior. And, you know, it's like, my vote is important. That's part of who I am. I can't vote for this person, you know, because he's this or that, or she's this and that. But I'm just telling you, that is a very false piety, I believe. You know, it's not about your piety, really. It's about the good of the country. It's the better choice. It's your only choice right now. It's your only choice. And this is not a deacon in your church. This is not your pastor. This is a different system. It's a political system. And trust me, it is not righteous. It has some righteous people in it, and they're the ones being salt and light in the political system. That's what we're supposed to be. But it is not. You don't have a choice of a pastor or a Sunday school teacher. You're choosing a senator. So I hope I've made my point. That's the battle between James Tallarico and Ken Paxton. And I actually think Ken is behind in many of the polls right now. So please, please think carefully about what you're doing. Be smart, you know, and God would want you to be smart. Wise as serpents, but harmless as doves.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Abortions performed by Planned Parenthood were among the top leading causes of death in America, revealing the terrifying truth of the left's anti-life agenda. According to Planned Parenthood's 2022-23 annual report, abortions performed by the organization accounted for the top four leading causes of death. Think about that. Paid for by our tax dollars. And honestly, this freight train is going down the track so fast and so powerfully. It's really hard. It's going to be hard for us to stop this. And I think one of the best ways, I've said before, I'll say again, is preborn. Preborn, who is not part of the government, not part of the public debate or campaigns, but an organization that's simply providing ultrasounds for moms who are pregnant and doubting whether they should carry the baby to allow them to see their baby through ultrasound. It's an amazing process, and it actually works. When the moms see their babies, I think it doubles the chance that they will not take the life of their baby. You know, you can't beat those odds. If you'd like to help, $28 pays for one ultrasound, just one, and you can send however much you can afford. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, now we're going to move to the great state of Florida, my favorite state now. It is. And it's an interesting race for Senate there because you've got Ashley Moody, who is the sitting senator. She was the attorney general for Florida. She did a very good job when she was down here. And then she went to the Senate, and she's been actually quiet in her first term. I've been a little disappointed in that, frankly. But she's coming out now, kind of swinging, and I hope that carries on if she wins this race into swinging away in the Senate. But she has a challenger, and Angie Nixon just came out of nowhere. That's what we're told, that she didn't have much money, and she beat all the other opponents. just with her, you know, her campaigning style. Well, maybe that's true, but I doubt it. She's a radical socialist. I bet she had a little bit of money from somewhere. I'm just guessing. But this is Angie Nixon giving her acceptance speech. She's the Democrat nominee for Senate in the state of Florida. This is what Angie sounds like. Clip 10.
You will always know where I stand.
All right, that's Angie Nixon, the Democratic candidate for Senate from Florida. Now, Angie also, her job is that she runs a bookstore called the Resistance Bookstore. And so Angie is not, she's new to us, but she's like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, who came out of nowhere. These people are groomed. She was a waitress or a bartender who was groomed by the left and trained. And she did a really good job. And so, Angie, when you see her on camera, because I saw a lot of clips, she's just got a sweet smile. She just smiles, and she's real sweet and soft. I'm telling you, this is the playbook. But her policies are going to be anathema. Now, Ashley Moody, if you're not familiar with her, again, was the attorney general in the state of Florida. But this is what she had to say in her acceptance speech for the Republican nomination, clip 9.
There are people right now that are signing up proudly for a socialist party. Many would call it a communist party. And they are bending on everything that this country stands for to join this radical fervor. And don't think it is a wing of a party. I want you to look at the election results tonight. My opponent will be a self-proclaimed socialist that proudly signed up and joined the Democratic Socialists of America. That will be my opponent. And on one side, you will have a candidate that stood up for the state in the face of government crackdown, big government, called out Washington, held them to account, has pressed for accountability when they overreached their power and lied to the American people. Always stood for independent and American rights. And you're going to have one side that I'm going to be up against that wants to, and the platform says, defund the police, don't fund our military, open up the border, non-citizen voting. I could go on and on. I'm sure the law enforcement men and women that are here with us tonight love the position they have on abolishing prisons and releasing criminals into our communities. We're not making this stuff up. In the state of Florida, who stood strong in the face of big government, you have now a Democratic Party that has put up as their nominee a self-proclaimed socialist who runs a bookstore called the Resistance Cafe. I am not making this up. This is not some made-up fiction TV story. This is the election that will take place in this free state of Florida this November. That is who the Democrats are running, because that is who they are as a party.
Well, she's right about that, and she did a good job with that. Now, at one point I'd like to make, this is the thing, and I've said before, but I want to emphasize again, these guys are trained, and when they get on the stump, or when they get in front of a television camera and they do their ads, they sound so nice. I think of Abdul Syed up in Michigan. He's running against Mike Rogers, and when Abdul is doing his ads or being interviewed, he has a great smile. He looks very Western. He talks very Western. He's got the slang, the lingo. He's dancing in some of the videos, some of the advertisements. He's like the man of the people. But, you know, it's funny because last night Jesse Waters interviewed him and really got through him off his game. And we learned that as winsome as he seems when he's talking, it's very deceptive. He doesn't really know much. Not really. Not the deep. He doesn't know things about this country that a senator should know. And Jesse really put him on the spot several times and so got him off his game, which I was glad to see. But if you don't have someone like Jesse doing that, he's very appealing. And so is Angie Nixon. They're very winsome. And so that reminds me of the next state. That's Georgia, where John Ossoff is running against Mike Collins. Now, John is a sitting senator. You might remember during the 2020 election, there was such chaos in Georgia about the ballots and counting and all of that. And there was confusion in this race for Senate. There's a very dark cloud over the election of John Ossoff and also Raphael Warnock, who came in at the same time. It was a really weird, weird period. But they won in that special election. And so they've been in the Senate now for a while. And John is a leftist radical. And I'm going to give you just an example of this. He made news just this week, making a comment about Natalie Harp. Now, nobody has known who Natalie Harp is. She's the girl at the Republican convention, that beautiful blonde girl who's told the story about she had contracted a very serious cancer. And no one thought it was curable. No one would do anything for her. And no treatment was going to be effective, or maybe she tried the treatments. And then President Trump passed that right to try bill. And Natalie found this medicine that was not approved by the FDA, took it, and it cured her cancer. So she loves President Trump, and now she's his special assistant. And she travels with him everywhere. She like takes a copier and copies of things. And you see lots of pictures of her with President Trump. It's Natalie Harp. Okay, so John Ossoff made a statement this week out of the blue. This is his style. He loves to slander, and he says a lot of things in a string of words, a lot of accusations. I'll give you a hint of it right now. This is clip 11.
He doesn't want to do the job. He wants to build his ballroom and travel with Natalie on their apparently defenseless flying palace gifted by the Emir of Qatar.
You see how good he is? It's a whole string of things, and that's kind of his style. And in the process, he slanders this girl, who for all accounts is a perfectly beautiful, sweet girl. But he's making inferences, you know. So he does go after President Trump, as he did with that clip while he's slandering Natalie Harp. And by the way, the news media went crazy over that. USA Today did like a 14-page story and pictures of Natalie with him just over and over again, you know, in sort of doubling down on the inference, which is really sick. But that's what the left does. They don't like anything good, you know. They like to twist anything that's good, and if they can destroy it, they will. Okay, so this is the next one. This is John Ossoff with Senator Mark Kelly is sitting next to him, former astronaut. And John is, I guess, introducing him at some event. John Ossoff, the senator of Georgia, running for election. Here he is, clip 3.
I don't think anything illustrates the times more aptly than that the draft-dodging crook president who has plunged our nation recklessly into a war he knows not how to end or to win tried to imprison this man who embodies American heroism, a decorated combat veteran, naval aviator, astronaut, space shuttle commander, U.S. Senator. Donald Trump tried to lock him up for daring to state in public a fundamental principle of military law. And you heard, I work closely with Mark. We sit together on the Intelligence Committee, and it's been a privilege to see how he has persevered despite these threats of imprisonment by his own government, dutifully serving his constituents in Arizona, dutifully seeing to the national security of all Americans, and not backing down for even a moment in the face of those threats. Thank you, Mark, for all you've done and for your courage.
You know, that explains a lot of things, because Mark Kelly, he's been around for a long time, and some of you may not know much about him, but I do. He has been he worked against gun control. He worked for gun control and taking away guns. That was a big thing for him for a long time, and he was very effective because he's very deceiving. He's a great talker. He's a great liar, and I'll go further with this. The most recent thing he did was, you might remember that there was a video that was made from several retired military people, and Mark Kelly was one of them as a sitting senator who made this video telling troops when this war with Iran was beginning, or this attack against Iran, making this video talking to the troops saying, you can refuse illegal orders. You must refuse illegal orders. So this is like... That's undermining the security of the nation, and especially by a sitting senator. So they did go after him, and the Justice Department was going to prosecute those guys. And I don't really know what happened with that, but that's the man of high standing, Mark Kelly, who wants to have the troops mutiny under their commander in chief. It's really disgusting. But that now Ossoff hangs around with him, so that makes a lot of sense. So the person running against John is a guy named Mike Collins. And he did an ad that I think kind of introduces him better than I can. That's clip 5. Let's listen.
In trucking, you gotta deliver. I'm Mike Collins, and that's why we drove home Trump's big, beautiful bill. We killed woke DEI garbage and banned boys from playing girls' sports. When Biden's open border got Lake and Riley tragically murdered by a criminal illegal alien in my district, I took matters into my own hands. I wrote the Lake and Riley Act so we can deport criminal illegals wherever they are, making sure this never happens again.
Mike Collins. Mike, you were fantastic. He loves his state, and he took this very personally.
We need a senator who works for Georgia, not the California crazies or New York nut jobs. But I don't know who John Ossoff really works for, but it sure as heck isn't Georgia.
Mike Collins for Senate.
It's time to send a trucker to the U.S. Senate to steamroll the radical left, deliver on President Trump's America First agenda, and put the people of Georgia back in the driver's seat. I'm Mike Collins, and I approve this message.
All right. So one problem, though. Ossoff has raised millions of dollars. I think $81 million. And he just got another $20 million last quarter. And guess where this money's coming from? Well, they claim, this is an article that says that nearly 90% of that money are donations from people contributing under $100. I tell you, I don't believe that for a minute. In fact, I'm understanding that he's getting money from all over the country, California and New York. And why would the people, Georgia's not that, there aren't that many billionaires in Georgia that would give, there's a lot of wealth, but not for John Ossoff, but this is what's happening around the country. So, and Mike Collins, on the other hand, I think has $2.2 million. That's it. And they are coming in from the people. They came. He's got 16,000 donations from all 159 counties at an average of $20 per donation. Isn't that more realistic? So, but that means that Mike won't have money to run ads and stuff. The official Republican committee that nominates candidates, the last time I checked, they're withholding money from Ken Paxton. Yeah, so Tallarico's got all this money coming in, too. And Paxton's running in the state of Texas. That's huge. That state is so big. Do you have any idea how much money it costs to get signs, to get flyers, to get television ads, radio ads. It costs a ton. I don't think it costs $100 million, which is what Ossoff has in Georgia, but it costs a ton. And as far as I know, the Republican entity that gives out money for people running is not giving money to Ken Paxton. You know, here's the thing. You think it's because he's immoral, or they think he's immoral, or he's embarrassing. No. That's not how they decide these things. Ken Paxton is so conservative on his votes and so strong and powerful and will stand up and fight in the Senate. They don't want him there. In fact, Cornyn's, the head of his communications team, no, his head of the policy division of his Senate office, has gone to work for Tallarico's race. They don't want Ken Paxton, not because he's icky, but because they know they can't control him. And I think the same thing is probably happening with Collins. Collins has a really good record. He's pro-life on everything, and he's a trucker. You know, I've interviewed him twice, actually. He's very bright, but he's not. He won't have the polish. Ossoff is very polished. Mike Collins is just a plain-speaking trucker. He's not a dumb mime. It don't mean he's not. He's very smart, by the way. Truckers used to listen to my show in Chicago all the time, and they're always very smart. They'd ask great questions, so no malignment meant to truckers. But you know what I'm saying. There's a polish that comes with for other people, especially the socialists. And so John Ossoff is very polished, and Mike is not, and Mike is underfunded. So I just think that's another state where there are a lot of you who are believers in Christ in Georgia. And Mike is Mike supports life. He's done a whole bunch of stuff here. He's done a lot of really good stuff that they don't want him to do either. Yes, so just to illustrate this, Mike Collins voted for the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. He co-sponsored legislation recognizing personhood as starting at conception. He supported budget and reconciliation measures aimed at stripping federal funding from organizations like Planned Parenthood. He signed an amicus brief seeking to limit access to the abortion pill, mifepristone. God bless him. I'm sure he's done other things, but that's what they highlighted when I looked it up. It's probably they think it's a detriment to him that people won't want him because he's so strongly pro-life. But I'm sure he's taken stands on other issues as well. Now, Ossoff, on the other case, has this is what he's done. He's campaigning as a partner with Keisha Lance Bottoms, who defunded the police and pushed failed sanctuary city policies. And he smears law enforcement. He refuses, or did refuse, to champion the Lake and Riley Act. And he voted to let men in girls' sports and allow men in women's bathrooms. I think it would be a disaster for Georgia to have him be their senator. And he compared President Trump and his administration to white supremacists and Nazis. So that's Ossoff, and that's Mike Collins, and that's Georgia. Well, I think, you know, there are other races I could cover, like Abdul Al-Sayed, but in Michigan. But we'll talk about that on a different day. I just wanted to kind of jumpstart so you'd know, just to be thinking, just think smartly. Not, you can't just think, which guy would I choose as a deacon or a Sunday school teacher? Because the reasoning is different. If you're not involved in the process, it's not a clean process like that. And morality is not so important in our country. So you have to vote for the very best person possible in a race. And if you don't vote for somebody, you are voting for the worst person. So I'm just asking you, and it will have an effect on you and your family. You'll have laws that will, like, force you, take your children away if you don't allow them to have transgender surgeries. It has happened. It is happening. And you'll rue the day that you did not get involved or vote smartly. So let's do that with God's help. With God's help, let's make right choices. All right, I want to remind you, we do this with the help of Preborn. If you want to help Preborn provide ultrasounds for women that are a little confused about their pregnancy, you can go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.